Hello, this is Dr. Stephen Nurse. The show is ABLE, the radio show about possibilities. And this show and this series is on service dogs, dogs of all kinds that help all kinds of people. We're going to talk specifically today about dogs that work with persons who are on the autism spectrum. And we're also going to talk to a person who uses a dog to alert her if she's her blood sugar level goes up and down for diabetes. And I want to say this is really probably one of the most exciting series that I've done, because I'm just learning that dogs have so many possibilities. In the show following this, we're going to talk about dogs and their ability to smell literally 1/1,000,000,000th of a particle out there floating around and distinguish it from others. So our first guest today is Raven Bile McCracken. Unleash the McCracken, I guess would be the best thing there to say. And Raven is a friend of mine from the island, and we've known her for many years. And she has a son, James, who is on the autism spectrum. He's gone through school here on all the schools on Vashon. And also, James, for many years, had a service dog that, and I'll let Raven talk about that. But Raven, why did you decide to get a service dog for James? And what was the kind of the procedure for getting the service dog?
So our major concern was that we kept losing him. So we would be at the zoo or at the monster truck, you know, show, or wandering around, you know, Walmart, whatever. And he would get agitated and pull away and run really fast. Also, he would get so overwhelmed very quickly in places that he would just shut down. Like, it used to take us, we live, a couple hundred feet from the bus stop, and it would take us 20 minutes to get there because of all the things that could bug him, and he didn't want us to touch him, and he would just sit down. And so we were suggested that a service dog might be helpful for that, and we're dog people, and so started researching it, and it seemed like it would be a good fit. So
it sounds like there's a, with James, that there were a lot of kind of, there was a lot of stimulus out there, mm-hmm. and is it true that many times you really couldn't predict what that trigger would be? And
exactly.
Like you say, all of a sudden he's at the monster truck show, and he's, where is he?
Right, exactly. And even things that we know were possible triggers, we never know when they'll show up. So if someone has their hood open, that means the car is sick, life is horrible, we need to throw a fit. You know, I never know when someone's going to have their hood open. So
where did you go to get the service dog?
We researched a lot of possibilities, and we ended up going with a company called Autism Service Dogs of America. They're in Oregon near Portland. And we decided we could get the dog fastest going that route, and because it was specialized for autism.
Is that a cost item? I know it costs an awful lot of money to train the dogs.
Mm-hmm. So when we got Comet, we had to raise $13,500. They were estimating that it cost about $30,000 to put the dog through the program. And we raised the money in 8 days on this island. That was before GoFundMe, so people weren't so exhausted by giving, but it was amazing how fast we got the money for Comet.
Yes, that's that's great. And we're dog people too. And so did James go down there and train with the dog, or I have a service dog, Maya,
mm-hmm.
and I've been running around all different places, getting her trained. we went into a Burger King, and one of our exercises is to drop French fries on the floor and make sure the dog doesn't pick them up, you know, which is something I had hard enough to do with my kids not right. going on the floor and Burger King and picking up fries. So what was the training? How did that go?
So autism service dogs are unique in that it is the only place where the handler is not the person getting the service. And so in this case, Mark and I were the handlers and James was the person getting the service. So we had to go down to Oregon without him. That was the first time we had ever left him with other people. It was totally crazy and liberating. And we trained for a week on how to handle him and had to go through testing and all that. And then Comet came up for 2.5 weeks and was kind of just a pet. He and James got to know each other and played around, and he went to work with me. And then their trainer came up to help with Comet in the environment. And so that was the first time James was tethered to him, and he went to all of his specialties and all that kind of thing. So,
and one of the things that I hear you saying, and when I, you know, my background's in special ed, and when I work with persons who have disabilities, one of the main goals, no matter who I'm working with, is to increase independence of that person,
mm-hmm.
so that that person is less reliable on whether it's certain kinds of accommodations or other people. And it sounds like in this case that getting Comet allowed James to be more independent. But what I hear you saying is it also allowed you to be more independent. Is that fair to say?
A little bit, yeah. The first time James was tethered to Comet, we were walking. And so James has the a leash around his waist, which is attached to the dog's pack. And we passed a water fountain, and James stopped and got a drink at the water fountain. And the dog trainer said, what would he have done yesterday without Comet? And I said, he probably would have screamed and thrown himself on the ground, and we wouldn't have known why, because he didn't have the words to tell us. And so that just that glimmer of him having that independence to see a water fountain and get a drink was amazing for us. Similarly, walking those couple hundred feet to the bus stop with him attached to Comet and no one touching him and him being able to go at his own pace, it would take just a couple minutes to get there. It was like he turned from a giant toddler to an 8-year-old who just happened to be attached to a dog. It was really miraculous for all of us.
And I think that's one of the things that, you know, having a disability and working with kids, I think that people don't have an understanding of how important and how critical it is to you know, we all take those things for advantage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can walk to the bus stop. It's no big deal. Somebody else can get into, for me, somebody else can get into a hotel room that has one step in it. To me, one step might as well be, you know, a mile.
Mm-hmm.
And here you're talking the same thing as, you know, letting James go to the bus stop relatively independently is like a major, major thing. And I
right.
think, you know, we need to be aware of that. And also does, you know, is I think it's important too, just to even think of maybe is Comet kind of a calming
yes, very much so. He did two things. He helped calm James down. He also alerted everyone around him in a very adorable way that James had an issue. Especially with young children, autism is kind of an invisible disability. And so people just think this kid is out of control and has bad parents and they're very impatient. But with the dog, suddenly people would look at the dog and smile, and they'd look at James and understand that he needed extra patience. So not only was he getting more independence, but the world around him was getting more information. And so, but about calming, we walked into Costco once, and Costco's a place where it could be great. It could be we're there for 20 minutes with a meltdown. And James went in, opened his mouth to scream, looked down and said, "Comet," and just was fine the whole time. And that was one of those moments where I was like, okay, you've changed our life right now, Comet. You've just...
And I could think of going into Costco. There's lots of stimulation in there. People moving back and forth, lots of colors. And I think that's also another reason why it would be really important to have a trained dog that doesn't sniff at everything, you know, doesn't try to get free samples at Costco. And
we did once run into a fake service dog who tried to attack Comet, and Comet was like, "I'd bite your head off if I wasn't in my vest, but I am, so I'm just going to ignore you." But I was really grateful at how well trained Comet was.
And I think that's really important because, and again, we mentioned this in some of our previous shows, you can get a certificate and a jacket for a dog that has absolutely no training whatsoever. And talk to people who had the service dogs attacked by non-certified dogs. So that's really important. Let me ask you this. What should people consider if they're thinking, you know, I think sometimes people think that getting a service dog, I have a child with a disability, getting a service dog is just kind of a solution to all my problems in the world, and it really isn't. So what kinds of things should people consider when they're in the process of thinking, you know, a service dog is appropriate or a service dog isn't appropriate?
I would say you want to try to get the needs met another way if you can. You suddenly have another being in your house that you're responsible for food and training and getting special insurance. You have to negotiate with the school. You have to be prepared to go into a space and fight for the right to be there.
So you're saying it's a big responsibility.
It is a huge responsibility. And if you're not willing to keep the training up and be serious about it, you just end up with an expensive pet or a liability. Because if you haven't trained your dog and it bites someone, you know, that's an issue. So, and it's, you know, we went on a cruise, we had to apply 6 months ahead of time to get papers to allow the dog, you know, into the Bermuda where we were visiting, you know, all those kinds of things are, you know, it's just, you think, oh, I don't need a dog sitter. But on the other hand, wherever you go, you have this dog. The first time the school called me and told me that Comet threw up, I was like, oh, no, no.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's really important that, you know, when we get a dog into that situation is that, you know, the school is responsible for certain kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
The school is not responsible for toileting the dog and doing those kinds of things.
Right.
And so that's key. And I think, you know, the other thing that you mentioned is just simply the expense of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
$13,000 is a lot of money to spend on an expensive pet if you don't have really unique reasons for
and then just also, you know, needing insurance and going to the vet for things you might not need to.
Okay. I think I'm going to close up this interview here, and you've been wonderful. And just in closing, do you have any, what would you say, or have there been any specific issues with Comet that where he's really, you know, you mentioned the thing about the drinking fountain, but maybe just let's mention one other where he's really made a difference, where you really can remember a specific.
We were in Target and James said, "Doggy belt off." And I said, no, you don't need the doggy belt. Where do you want to go? And he said, see Elmo. And he wanted to go look at the Elmo toy, when before he would have just run away. But not only did it allow him to slow down and share it with us, but because he didn't want to leave Comet, and it just gave him a lot more language that we couldn't have had that conversation if he had been crammed and wasn't supported by the dog. So,
and that's one thing too, I think, is that the dog also draws social interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to make sure that the dog is a working dog at the same time. They say that a person with a disability who has a dog, other people make more eye contact.
Absolutely.
With that person with disability.
Yeah, yep. They get more patience, yeah, and they get more respect. Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Raven, for participating in this. And that will conclude our first interview.
Great. Thank you.
This is our second interview of this program. And the whole series is called Who Let the Dogs Out? We're really dealing with service dogs and the amazing abilities that dogs have. If you've ever read the book, Germs, Guns, and Steel, turns out that dogs are one of the few animals that can be domesticated to actually help people. And so at this point, I'm going to do an interview with Emily Pruitt. I've talked to Emily a little before. And I'll let her. Emily has a service dog that is used by her. She has diabetes, and to help her determine blood sugar levels. We'll talk about how dogs can smell in trillions of parts per trillions. And so, Emily, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your service dog. And I think I don't remember his name, but I'll let you tell me that again. Go ahead.
So I'm Emily. I'm Logan's mom. Logan is my service dog. We've been matched for almost 3 years now. Oh, wait, no, that's almost 2 years. He's almost 3 years old. So he's still young. And I got him in December 2018, and it's been life-changing, honestly, to have him. So he's just kind of like this other tool that I get to use, just like an insulin pump or a blood sugar meter. But his nose is quicker than all the technology that I have, meaning before my insulin pump will go off and alert me that my blood sugar is dropping, you know, Logan is pawing my hair or is waking me up in another way. So that's kind of a brief description.
Where did you get Logan?
I got him through Diabetic Alert Dogs of America, which is a Nevada-based company. And they have a really great process. So I was put on the wait list. And then when you get matched with your dog, they fly your dog up. Well, let me step back. So then I got matched with him, and I sent my scent samples down to Nevada. So he was trained to my scent and what my scent smells like at different levels of blood sugar. So like below 40, below 60, and above 150, he got to know what I smelled like during all of those different numbers. And then finally in December, he got flown up here with his trainer, and we got
trained
together.
Was he flown first class, or was
he flies coach, but honestly, he gets more perks because when I've flown with him, you know, he has a thing for the stewardesses giving him extra room. So we get a lot of the bulkhead seating or even first class sometimes.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of advantages to having a dog. That's for sure.
Yes. He's more than just a tool. He's my best friend.
So I think that's really important, too, is that, you know, as I was mentioning this morning, I just got a new service dog, Maya, who's mm-hmm. right here beside me, and a couple weeks ago. And it is, how do you differentiate, and this is one of the things for me, too, between times when, is your dog working all the time? Sometimes my dog is out of his out of his vest, and he knows that we can play ball. Other times, mm-hmm. he's very much, you know, on alert for me to watch other people, to watch where I'm going in my wheelchair. Is there any way you can differentiate from those two times?
Sure. So he's on duty like all the time, meaning that even when we're doing a play activity, he will, if he smells a low blood sugar, he's going to come alert me usually. And I say usually because unless he is swimming with tennis balls, which is his favorite thing to do, that will happen. And it's interesting because in quarantine, we've been kind of off duty. You know, my office, I don't go into the office anymore. I work from home. So I've kind of failed a little bit as a handler to have him on duty and in command while I'm working. So she's kind of, she's gotten more relaxing time. But as far as alerting, which is his number one job, I mean, he's always on it. He just did it this morning after coffee. My blood sugar was just dropping below 80, and he was all fitted and seated and pawing alerting.
And so he paws at you, or he, how does he indicate to you that?
It's a paw alert. But if okay. I'm ignoring, like if I'm asleep, he will paw alert at first. But if I'm not like waking up, he does more of kind of nudging and kind of climbing on top of me. Biting my hair is kind of his favorite thing to wake me up for.
It's too bad that all dogs aren't like Scooby-Doo, so they can talk. You know, your blood sugar level is low. You know, but that doesn't happen. I understand. It's like, isn't it isoprene or something? It's something that they detect in the blood that's just so. It's just so hard to detect, but they can detect that in blood. Do you know anything about that, or can you tell me about that? Or
I don't. I know that when he was scent trained, it's to the samples of saliva. So it's more. I mean, I feel like sugar for me, like high blood sugar is on my breath, and only when you're really extremely high can doctors even smell you. But dogs are just so sensitive to any smell. I heard someone describe it as like, you come in the house and you smell that soup is on the stove, and a dog can smell, well, there's carrots and celery and onions and cumin, and they can identify each unique part of that smell. So I'm not sure what it is in the blood, and I hadn't done my research to know the names of those terms, but you know, they only think dogs can smell blood sugar in 2004. So it's been kind of a more new developed tool that we've been able to access. But I don't know the name.
Can you tell me any, you know, any unique situations where you've been in where Logan has really, I mean, you know, we mentioned that he's been with you and he's a partner, and, but any specific situations where you can remember where Logan was really a lifesaver or?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's three distinct times that I know that he intervened and saved me. One was when I first got him, and he was alerting me of a low, or what I thought was a low, but my blood sugar reader kept reading normal. So it was saying I was 100, which is a good blood sugar. And Logan was agitated and kept pawing me. But I decided to go on a run. And because I was normal, I thought I was fine. And I was still getting used to kind of what his skill was like and what how much I could trust him. And so it was about 10 minutes later, and he stopped while I was running and just sat down and tried to paw me again. And it was kind of all at once that I got hit with this low blood sugar. And my blood sugar read on the meter that I was down to 40.
Wow.
So I sat on the sidewalk with my honey and took care of the blood sugar.
So he was more effective really than a glucose meter.
Yeah, Yeah, so his nose is about 20 minutes sooner than the meter. So by the time it's on the finger stick, the blood goes into the meter. That's about a 20-minute-old blood sugar, is the way it was described to me when I was getting trained on Logan.
Uh-huh.
And so since then, I know that when he's alerting me that I have to trust him. And it's kind of been a relationship just about building that trust with each other. You know, he has to trust that I'm going to take care of the blood sugar, too, and that part of, you know, having his good behavior, he gets to have naughty behavior if I'm out of range, because it's his job to break a down state to come and say, hey, Mom, you're out of range here. So if I want to really, you know, a dog that's not anxious or getting up all the time to come and alert me and do his job, I have to be trustworthy to be accountable for what he's doing and make sure that I'm regulating myself as much as possible.
So, and you mentioned there maybe one other incident like that?
Yeah. So I also am a real avid hiker. I like to be out in the mountains.
Great time to do it now, isn't it? With COVID. Right. Yes.
Right. And he loves to hike as well, but, you know, you were talking kind of about that on-duty, off-duty time, and he's mostly off-duty getting to explore and sniff. And but I'll tell you what, when I had a low blood sugar on the trail, he wouldn't leave my side. He wouldn't go up ahead. He just would stay right next to me, even when my friend was with him. And I just remember that being really important because that was another time I wasn't quite low yet, but he was not leaving my side, so I knew to check again and to treat the low blood sugar because I knew it was coming.
So if somebody in your situation, would you recommend people that have diabetes look into this? And what are some of the, you know, there are a lot of responsibilities on you to have a dog and to take care of a dog, and it's, you know, it is a responsibility. What should people be thinking about if they wanted to do something like this?
I think for me, to recognize that the dog doesn't have an off switch is kind of, and you're going to always be on and be responsible for that dog's job. You know, I think he's an excellent tool and he's an awesome resource and just what a fabulous companion I get to have. I'm so lucky. But I didn't understand, I think, how much training, ongoing training for me and for him was going to be required. It's a big job to have a service dog and to make sure that you're taking care of that service dog and you're maintaining his training. Go ahead, sorry.
I was just saying one last question. Do you think Logan can tell your moods?
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's, you know, the reason I ask that, I think that dogs are pretty amazing at that and that they can tell our moods. And they are pretty amazing animals. And I think you would agree with that with Logan. And I want to thank you very much for taking the time to do this interview with me. And this is going to help a lot of people. And so... Take care, Emily. And
thanks for having us.
Yes, and yes for having. He didn't get to bark or anything, but
oh, he did grow, and I don't know if that. Got
yeah, that's right. Okay, well, thank you very much, and you take care and have a great day, and
all right,
be safe.
Thank you so much. You as well.
Okay, and that's going to be the end of our program for this program, and so. We'll see you soon.